From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 18th day of March, 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, TGM's own Matt Bennett will be here to look at the cash grain market. Along the way, we'll get an update of the agricultural weather forecast from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, Steve Hilberg. And I'll tell you all about how the size of the Monmouth, Illinois Field Research Station has doubled and the celebration to be held on the 31st day of March. It all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, here are the settlement prices in the May corn contract. 684 3/4, the final price up 38 1/4 for the day. July at 690 1/4, up 36 1/2. And September, 638, up 25 cents. December futures, $5.97 3/4, a gain of 18 1/2 cents on the afternoon. Soy complex for the day finished up with the nearby contract at $13.62 1/2 in the May, a gain of 27 1/2 cents. July at 13.71, up 27 1/2. And the August beans at $13.65 3/4, up 26. It was the September at $13.49 3/4, up 28 3/4. November soybeans 29 3/4 higher at $13.32 even. Bean meal finished the nearby contract up $8.20 at $3.66.80, and the May soybean oil 95 cents higher at $55.47. Wheat futures finished the Kansas City July at $8.55 3/4, up 14, and the July contract in the soft red in Chicago up 15 1/2 at $7.60 3/4 of a cent. Live cattle futures at the CME Group in Chicago, April contract up 40 cents at $112 even. The nearby feeder cattle in the March contract at 128.17 1/2, up 47 1/2 on this Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Here's the weather forecast from the Urbana-Champaign area. From the National Weather Service, they're saying this afternoon a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, should be mostly cloudy. A high near 57 degrees. North-northwest winds at around 10 miles an hour. They'll gust as high as 16. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 34. North-northwest winds at 8 miles an hour. And Saturday, we should see mostly sunny skies. A high near 55. East-northeast winds between 8 and 11, gusting to 15. Saturday night, a 30% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy, a low of 39 degrees. East-southeast winds between 9 and 11. They'll gust as high as 15, and on Sunday, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy, a high near 55 degrees. South-southeast winds at 13 to 17, gusting to 23. As we finish out the weekend, Sunday night, a 30% chance of showers. Mostly cloudy, a low of 50. The work week starts out partly sunny, a high near 69. Monday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy, a low of 47. On Tuesday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Cloudy, a high near 60 degrees. Tuesday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy and a low of 43. On Wednesday, should be mostly cloudy, a high near 52. And on Wednesday night, mostly cloudy skies, a low of just 31 degrees. By the time we get to Thursday, should be partly sunny. The high near 45. We'll have a more complete look at the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour, and we talk with Steve Hilberg at the Midwestern Regional Climate Center.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. Time to check in on the agricultural commodity markets. Mike Zuzula of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hello there, Todd.
What an interesting week it has been in the marketplace. Where do you want to start today?
Well, I guess maybe where we started and where we ended with the two major factors and how they shaped up. I think the biggest issue coming into this week, the two major problems that not just the grains but all the markets faced were, A, the potential loss of demand due to Japan's earthquake and tsunami, and then the second thing that was probably more pertinent to the ultimate break in the trade, in the grain trade, and the deleveraging that took place was the fears, the increasing fears that Japan would actually default on its debt. Where did that come from? Well, I think, Todd, it probably came from the idea that when Japan opened their stock market up, the first two sessions they lost over, 11% on the market capitalization. That was over $1 trillion. I think that got a lot in the trade starting to worry that not only would they not be able to rebuild, but they wouldn't be able to service their debt because of what their stock market was doing. So that was the beginning of the week. And as we finished up the week, we had the group of seven biggest economic countries come in, support Japan. And along with that, we had a more quiet mindset in terms of the nuclear reactor and the radiation, and it took the pressure off the demand negativity. And it really, in the end of the week trade, it really healed up the charts nicely. We got the December corn back above its 50-day moving average of 585. Nove beans above, back above its 50-day moving average of 1329. And the May wheat, it didn't get back above its 200-day moving average of 740, but did touch it for a high.
Now, as you and I talk, this is actually just not long after the close. We're doing a Skype conversation today rather than trying to put me on the phone line because I wanted to make sure that we had a really good sound quality for this Friday show as we finished up an important week in the marketplace. The last trade I have for December corn is 618. That's pretty close to the settlement price. Not quite the settlement. You should have real-time quotes. Where did they finish up, actually?
I'm showing it a little bit lower than that, down around the 596, 597 level. The front-end corn looks like it held on very, very nicely to its gains, only about 10 cents off the extended limit up move. But looks like the Deese corn may only close up only about 17 to 20.
Yeah, you'll have to forgive me. I caught the high, which was a 618. It was a 596 on my last trade. But it's dropping off as we speak here. There was a 619 and a quarter high out there a couple of times on that December contract. That we didn't quite reach. How important is it technically at the end of this week that it didn't make that or try to break through that point?
I'm not real nervous about that, and I'll tell you why. I really was more nervous about the S&P getting back above 1285 and those outside markets providing support to the corn. I think I'm probably more nervous that the wheat corn spread gave up another 24 to 25 cents when it comes to the corn more than I am the corn outright technicals, that the wheat didn't perform nearly as well as I thought it should have, especially given the NOAA update for the April outlook showing very, very dry and above normal temps continuing for the southern plains for the month of April. So I'm not real nervous about the Deese corn technicals or the May corn technicals at this point by themselves because of the S&P, the weather. I'm more concerned that the wheat is going to pose some problems for the corn next week.
Are you satisfied at this point that most of what has happened in Japan has been put into the marketplace and that we're done trading that part of the volatility?
No, I'm not, and it's a huge question. I'll say it in two parts. I'm not satisfied from a standpoint of the radiation, and the IAEA did raise the level from, I think, a 4 to a 5 on Friday. The U.S. is still sitting at a 6 out of 7, with 7 being a Chernobyl-type event. So we don't have that put away yet in terms of the radioactivity issue. I also reached out to a Japanese fellow I met at the USDA data users meeting last fall and sent him an email and said, if you can't respond, we certainly understand this, but I am trying to get more hard information about what happened over there in their feed and their livestock industry. And he was so good, and I was so appreciative of him responding and being so courteous. And he did reply back through one of the people underneath him that there are ports, major points of importing feed grain from other countries that have taken a hit. not only that, Todd, but I think this is the most pertinent part of the message they sent me. It's that they are having fuel problems to the point where even if they could get the grain offloaded at the ports, they probably would have trouble getting it loaded to a rail or a truck to get it serviced to the livestock feed areas. And so the demand issue, they're buying grain. We saw that. They're number one buyer in our weekly export sales for corn again this week. But are they actually going to be physically taking the grain? Whereas Smithfield reported at the end of this week, they saw a pickup in actual shipments of pork to Japan. I think this gives us an indication that maybe here in the first 3 to 6 months of this tragedy, we're going to see a lot bigger move of our meat products and other countries' meat products like South Korea into Japan and maybe less of our grains. My hope is that South Korea and China, which has been confirmed as a buyer of U.S. corn as of Friday's close, we don't know the amount yet, but maybe South Korea and China and other countries that feed livestock will make up the difference of what maybe Japan won't buy. But that's still an unanswerable for me right now.
If they make that up, do you think that the grain bins from here will feed that livestock? And on the flip side, is it likely, and I'm guessing not at this point, that the poultry and the pork and possibly the beef that makes its way in the short term to Japan will be sourced from the United States?
I think the latter question, yes, because we have the best sanitary and phytosanitary pork and beef and poultry available, in my view. The first question, though, I'm concerned that we will not get the corn feeding demand that we would normally get, because if these other countries decide to take up the slack of Japan, they may see wheat as a lot better substitute to feed their livestock, and certainly the price is there to have wheat compete with us, and it continues to keep that wheat as our building block or our base for a substantially strong corn market after we get over the springtime planting, acreage, stocks report issues. The more medium-term issues continue to promote the idea that wheat's our leader.
All right, so let's get back to the fundamentals of the marketplace, and maybe you can give me an idea. I don't know whether you've looked this up yet or not. In the case of Japan, how much of a total impact does it have on our livestock and agricultural export sector if they were to disappear completely? And I'm sure that's not the case. I'm just trying to get an idea of where we really stand with them.
The total agriculture, my understanding on a dollar basis, is they are number one. And when you boil it down to pork, they are up there in the top one, two, three all the time. Corn, the same thing. The corn issue is probably the most pressing. And we saw earlier in the week the corn and the hogs took it on the chin the hardest, it seemed to me anyway. And it made sense because corn, we're sending 1 million to 1.5 million tons per month to China right now, to Japan right now. So you're talking about, 590 to 600 million bushels of corn that's on the table each marketing year that's very, very important not to lose.
So top of your mind to watch then continues to be China, potentially their economic recovery from this, the nuclear
Japan,
power,
right,
or
right.
Japan, I'm sorry, their nuclear power plants. And then we get to the March 31 grain stocks and prospective plantings report from USDA.
And we got a glimpse of what the market is worried about by the Informa numbers. If anything helped turn the markets from going negative on Friday, because I think the beans were on their way to go negative before the Informa numbers were released. They were only up 8 to 9 cents when the Informa numbers came out and showed 75.3 million planted acres of beans. You run that through the numbers at a 43.4 yield, and you're talking about a 3.2 production. Add last year's carryover in, and you've got about a 3.4 supply against USDA's baseline demand of 3.34 billion demand bushels. You're talking about moving carryover next year from a 160 from USDA's baseline down to probably 80-90. So you're looking at sub 100 million bushel carryover in beans if you take the Informa numbers from Friday at face value. And the trade did take them at face value for most of the session. They did cool off and settled down about 25 cents off their highs. But this is where, going into the acreage and stocks report, any fluctuations in one or the other will send the markets reeling. The unfortunate and disappointing part about it is that we're going to get to a point probably where you rob Peter to pay Paul. In other words, after the acreage report and the stocks report, either corn's going to go up and beans down or vice versa, I'm guessing. So that's where that diversification in your marketing plan is probably going to be real important.
Okay, you've got most of your guys locked in, I suppose, with crop insurance, or most of them have themselves locked in for crop insurance. What do they do?
Well, I'm still stuck with the 25% on the corn puts that I put on last Friday. I was very glad I did that because I was hoping I'd be wrong. It ended up being right. and we came back around, and those puts are losing a little bit at this stage, but I'm very glad we have them in terms of the downside protection. I still think that if the weather, the NOAA weather outlook is right, and what surprised me about the NOAA weather outlook was the Western Corn Belt's looking much below normal temperatures here for all the month of April. I think that's a new fundamental feature that the trade has not factored in yet. So if they price that in, I still think we can get that December corn up to that 625 to 640 level. If I can't get any better wheat price action, though, Todd, I'm going to press the selling side regardless of what the outside markets do, just because it's getting to the price level where I think the market may not be able to take much more. So hanging on with 50% hedges and beans with half of that covered and 25% hedged in new crop corn with looking to do more at higher levels.
Mike, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you at 3 o'clock Central by Skype for our Commodity Week program today.
Sounds good. Thanks again, Todd.
Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. You know, the Northwestern Illinois Agricultural Research and Demonstration Center in Monmouth is doubling in size and celebrating its recent land acquisition in a special ceremony for the public. That's coming up on Thursday, March the 31st. I'll have all the details in a moment.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
More than a decade ago, the University of Illinois set a goal to increase acreage at the Research and Education Center scattered around the state. This year, Emerson Nafziger, coordinator of the Crop Sciences Research and Education Centers, says the Monmouth Research Farm will double in size. Nafziger says the local citizen support behind this expansion speaks directly to the high value of the Monmouth Research Center. In order to preserve the research center, a group of citizens formed the Northwest Agricultural Education Foundation and purchased 80 acres adjacent to the Monmouth Research Center for U of I to use for research activities. If the Monmouth Field Station ceased to exist, the loss of the station would have a devastating impact on Western Illinois and the region around it, as well as its agricultural producers, says Les Allen. He's a local banker, farmer, and member of the foundation. Each year, about 50 different projects are conducted by up to 12 campus-based project leaders and center superintendents on the University of Illinois research farms. Subject matter areas involved in these projects include soil chemistry and fertility, soil management, crop production, weed science, entomology, plant pathology, pest management, and environmental quality. Now, Nafziger says the added acreage at Monmouth provides many research benefits. Well, just being able to rotate into and out of different trials minimizes possible effects of one trial on the trial that follows it. The Northwestern Illinois Agricultural Research and Demonstration Center celebration is scheduled for March 31 at the Research Center in Monmouth. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. Matt Bennett with TGM at Windsor in Windsor, Illinois at the elevator is with us to take up the cash grain market this afternoon. What a wild week it has been, Matt, in the commodity markets. Have farmers been calm through the ups and the downs of the week?
It just depends on which farmer we're talking about. Some of them have been pretty calm. Some of them have been a little bit excitable. But, you know, the bottom line is they all know this is a new age of of volatility that's actually this week, it's almost unprecedented, the kind of swings we've had. So it's been an interesting week.
When you started out the week and we were watching the market roll down on the economic news that was coming out of Japan post-quake and tsunami, did you have a feeling that the marketplace might return at the end of the week based on the tight supplies that were in the world and the demand that had been previously posted?
Yes, I did. I felt, you know, a lot of times when we have an outside influence such as, you know, all the earthquake situation and tsunami over in Japan, you know, they are a big consumer of our corn, but they're going to remain a big consumer. You just have to figure out the ways that logistically they're going to get that done. So I guess we felt like, you know, at some point we would return maybe a little bit of stability to the market. I don't know that I envisioned a limit up move on Thursday and you know, limit up at least for a while here on Friday. I don't know that I envision that, but I certainly envision some stabilization.
As we move forward through the marketplace, do you think that the stabilization will stay in place, especially as the planters start to roll? And then, of course, there are some informant numbers that were out earlier today that show an expectation of less than 92 million acres for planted corn acreage.
Right, and I saw that, 91.8 on corn acreage, and then bean acreage, we only estimated 75.3, so I was kind of surprised at those numbers based upon what other people have been saying that they might be and what the government's kind of indicated that we needed. And I think if we only end up with 91.8, I think that's definitely friendly, at least to the market not falling apart. As we move forward, I would envision that there would be some actual, you know, basis appreciation maybe through springtime because guys traditionally don't pull a lot of corn during that period. As far as the price goes on the board, I think it's anyone's guess. You know, there's a lot of instabilization in the world right now, a lot of uncertainties, and it's pretty tough to forecast what this market's going to do. I just don't think that it's going to fall away too fast because our demand is so high.
Put on your farmer shoes as opposed to your cash grain elevator shoes. When you look at the marketplace, and I'm fairly certain that you've used crop insurance, you locked that in as of this week, you probably have a profit locked in. What do you do about marketing both new crop corn and new crop soybean?
Well, whenever I look at the insurance prices, you know, right now corn is just hovering around the 601 area right now as we're talking, and you know, that's the area that the insurance was booked. And if I get a whole lot above that, I might go ahead and let go of some more corn. Most of our guys are in the 25 to 30% sold already. You know, I don't know that I would push that heavily, but I'm a strong advocate of buying some put options to put a floor under these levels, especially as we get very high above our insurance prices.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us today, Matt, and you have a good weekend.
Yep, thanks a lot, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with Total Grain Marketing, that's TGM, out of Windsor, Illinois, helping us take a look at the cash grain market on this Friday afternoon. In just 2 minutes, I'll be back when we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Steve Hilberg about the agricultural weather forecast right here on the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stewart-peterson.com.
It's National Oatmeal Cookie Day. Oats was one of the earliest cereals cultivated by humankind. They were known in ancient China as long ago as 7,000 BC and in Europe around 3,000 years ago. By the way, oatmeal cookies are the number one non-cereal use for oatmeal, followed by meatloaf and cakes and pies. On this day in agricultural history in 1834, the first U.S. railroad tunnel was completed between Hollidaysburg and Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Driven through slate, the Staple Bend Tunnel was 901 feet long, 25 feet wide, and 21 feet high, and lined throughout with masonry 18 inches thick. In 1853, Rudolf Diesel was born. He invented the internal combustion engine. Diesel threw himself over the rail of an English Channel steamer in 1913 after losing control of his invention and receiving criticism in German engineering journals. In 1863, women rioted in Salisbury, North Carolina, to protest the lack of flour and salt in the Confederacy. And in 1920, Wesley Buscelli was born, an agricultural engineer. His 25 patents include the farm forage handling machine that has produced the familiar large round hay bales in U.S. fields since the 1960s. He also developed rollover protective devices for tractors. And while a professor at Iowa State University, he originated the first course in the U.S. on agricultural safety. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Steve Hilberg at the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, funded in part by NOAA, is with us today to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Steve, it feels like spring has sprung here in the state of Illinois.
Yeah, we certainly got a good dose of that yesterday with sunshine and temperatures shooting well up into the 70s across much of Illinois. We hit at least 70 here in Champaign, and that's probably the warmest it's been since the first week in November. So it was very nice, and I would hesitate to say I'm actually seeing little tinges of green in spots as well. So looks like things will be more spring-like here for the next few days at least.
And tell me about that. Will we have nice weather?
Yeah, we shouldn't have too bad a weather. It looks like a generally active weather pattern here for the next week or so. Temperatures should be above normal for the most part, but we're going to be seeing periodic bouts of showers and thunderstorms. I think probably the weekend, Saturday, should be pretty nice for the most part, but we'll see showers and thunderstorms moving across Illinois as warmer air begins to return. We typically see that ahead of warm air, warm fronts and warm air coming back in. So that'll be on Sunday, and that'll bring back warmer weather again. So we'll be back up into the 60s Sunday into Monday and Tuesday. But then another cold front comes through later in the week and brings a few more showers and thunderstorms, mostly scattered, but also just a little drop in temperature toward the middle part of next week, Wednesday, Thursday. So we're not seeing any real cold weather right now. No snow and, some occasional rain here and there, but in generally pretty normal weather for this time in March.
You know, it is the 18th day of March in a couple of weeks, about time we get to that first week of April, maybe heading into the second week of April. Producers will be really anxious to begin planting corn. I know it's hard to take a look that far out, but do you think the planting season will get off to a good start?
It could, especially if we stay with this warmer weather. Soil temperatures are still pretty low, seeing mostly in the upper 30s. You look much north of I-70. So soil temperatures are still cold yet, but if we get we don't get any real cold periods, which does look like we will have here for a foreseeable future, things should progress. But that would probably be the main limiting thing right now. The first 2 weeks of March have been pretty cold and damp and dreary. We've got a lot of cloud cover, so not a lot of sunshine. But hopefully that'll change here in the next couple of weeks. And with the warmer weather, things should warm up nicely. I'd say we're in pretty good shape at this point, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Let's wrap up by taking a quick look at the winter of 2010-2011. When it goes into the record books, what will it show?
Well, it'll certainly show a very snowy one for all of Illinois. Some locations did have some record snowfall, but overall precipitation during the winter was just at or slightly below normal, even though we had all that snow, not a lot of water at times. So a pretty interesting winter in that regard. But yeah, generally a cold, snowy winter.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey. He joins us on this Friday afternoon right here on the Closing Market Report. Don't forget to tune in for Commodity Week if you get the opportunity. You can always hear it on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. We'll get it posted hopefully a little bit earlier than usual this week. I'm working from home, as you already know, and we'll have a Skype conversation about 3 o'clock this afternoon. By maybe 4:30, we'll get Commodity Week up on willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great day.